The next afternoon, the castle was abuzz with activity, as the party guests who'd stayed the night before packed up and headed out, followed not all that long afterward by the rest of the group. For Boxing Day, Liza and Azalin, tousled and sleepy-eyed, won the Last Ones Down to Breakfast award, and accompanying smirk from Kay. Breakfast was a somewhat less elaborate affair today, which was somehow appropriate, given that it was taking place at about 1 in the afternoon. Once they were done, everyone packed up their things and got ready to head back to Beltane, thence to Challenger and their eventual destinations. Some of the duelists were returning to Gerardo, since, unlike WPI's, Satori Mandeville Memorial's residences didn't close for the holiday. The others, Caitlin, Utina, Juri, Mickey, Dorothy, Sayanji, Wakaba, and Liza, were heading to New Avalon, intent on being there for the New Year's revels.
Sure you don't want to come along?
Kate asked Azalin as the Dantrovian shouldered her bag and prepared to take her place on the transporter pad for beam down to Gerardo.
Plenty of room?
In truth, there wasn't. They'd be a bit packed in, some of them sleeping on couches and the like, as it was. But Azalin didn't take up much space, and they were going to be giving Liza someplace to sleep anyway. Azalin smiled apologetically.
No, I'm sorry, Kate. I'd love to, but I've got some stuff I really have to do here that day.
Kate looked a little confused by that. What could Azalin possibly have to do on Gerardo on New Year's Eve? But she let it pass, not least because of the look of understanding on Liza Schustal's face as she stepped up and embraced Azalin.
Have a good time in New Avalon, Azalin told her.
Then she grinned wickedly and added, Say hi to your father for me. Liza chuckled.
If I see him, I'll give him your love, she replied,
then leaned down and kissed the Dantrovian briefly but passionately.
Until I see you again, she added. I'll count the hours, Azalin said, smiling.
Only the hours, Liza replied, raising an eyebrow.
I don't have the patience for anything more granular, Azalin told her, then hopped up onto the platform.
Have fun, everybody. I'll see you back here next week. The others on the platform, Mia, Bilana, Moose, Skaya, and their intrepid house guide, echoed the sentiments, and then they were away. With the rest of the crowd already dispersed and Challenger en route to New Avalon by Metaspace, the 5 Sephirians and 2 Avalonians, and Robot, and Tiger, and Cat, and Demigod, and Dragon, retired to the forward lounge to scope out the Metavoid and talk about their plans in the Magic City. It would be the first visit for Wakaba, Sayanji, and Juri. Kate, Utina, and Miki were eager to share its wonders with them. Corwin offered tours on foot or by air, and Utina encouraged them to take him up on the Zeppelin tour, as it was quite remarkable. As they chatted, the doors in the back of the lounge opened, and Megazone and Juri came in, looking intent about something. The 2 elder experts of justice approached, stopped just outside the circle of chairs and couches the duelists had assembled, and waited for their presence to kill the conversation. Then Zoner said, Koworu, we need to talk to you outside. Miki blinked, then got up.
Certainly. Excuse me,
he added to the others, then followed Zoner and Juri out of the lounge, down the hall, and into a conference room. He knew what it was about, of course. They were Sylvie's parents. They must have found out that she'd spent the night in his room. They'd ended up talking for hours. When Dorothy returned from her walk, she'd assessed the situation, determined that it was a private conversation, and, with great tact, excused herself. That tactful understanding was, Miki reflected, one of his favorite things about Dorothy. It rather reminded him of Juri in her better moods, and explained why the 2 women made such good roommates. At any rate, Sylvie had wound up spending the night. They talked and talked and finally fell asleep.
Heh, I could tell people I did sleep with you and I wouldn't be lying, she observed as she left.
And now her parents were here, and apparently they thought that he'd done the very thing he'd warned her about. What irony. Mickey would have chuckled if the odds hadn't been so good that it would be completely misunderstood, and if Megazone's black gaze and Yuri's calm, appraising look weren't unnerving him so much. Even though he had no guilt of anything, they made him feel as if he should have been guilty of something, looking at him like that. He said, and triggered his watch. I realize, what last night must look like from an outside perspective, but I assure you. He trailed off as Zoner stepped off from the edge of the conference table he'd been leaning on, closed the difference between them with two slow, measured strides, and stood looking down at him. Then the big man grinned and clapped him on the shoulder. Thanks, he said. That's needed doing for a while now, but there hasn't been anyone to do it. Yuri nodded. Guy doesn't dare, and anyway, he's too young to pull it off. Relief almost made Miki sway on his feet. He stopped his watch, checked the time, and then said, You know what really happened? Zoner nodded. Sylvie told us. I knew she'd gone to see you last night, and that she didn't come back, Yuri said. But I believe in giving people the benefit of the doubt, so I waited until I'd had a chance to hear it from her before doing anything about it. She told us what you did for her, and how you did it. Zoner grinned. And that you had a long talk about why you did it, but she wouldn't tell us about that part. Yuri chuckled, then drew herself up importantly and said, in a fairly good imitation of her eldest daughter on her dignity, It was a private conversation, Mother, and frankly none of your business. Took a lot of guts to tell me that when she'd just admitted spending a whole night in a boy's room, added Yuri with a laugh. I respect that. Anyway, Zoner chipped in, I don't really care why you did it. I'm just glad you did. I've been worried about her for a while now, but couldn't think of a way to get through to her. She's a good kid, he added ruefully, then grinned slyly and went on. But she inherited her mother's wild streak. Yuri hit him on the arm. My wild streak? At 2, Chaos Walker? Zoner rubbed at the spot where she'd hit him and chuckled. Anyhow, you gave her something to think about, and you did it in a way that neither of us could ever have done. So we wanted to thank you. You might have saved her a big, big problem later. That's it. End of speech. If you want, you can limp back into the lounge and pretend you're having trouble sitting down. Yuri tisked and shoved Zoner out the door into the hall. Get back to work, you, she said with mock irritability. Then she turned to Miki, smiled, and said, But in all seriousness, Miki, thank you. It was a very good thing you did for her. She leaned, kissed him on the cheek, patted his shoulder, and then went off up the hall, herding Zoner ahead of her. Miki watched them go, then smiled and went back to the lounge. They arrived in New Avalon that night at 8, just in time for Corwin, Kate, and Utina to take the three newbies on the grand motoring tour around Highway 29, before rendezvousing with the others again to invade Tanjordan's ultimate shamata and grill for Megazone's birthday dinner. Then, replete, the whole company made their way to Crescent Heights and the houses on Morgan Lane. Griffin and Kay spent a few minutes opening up spare rooms, of which their house had several, rounding up extra bedding for couches and so forth, and before long they had their guests situated. The following day was Kay's birthday. They spent the day making a trip to the IPO's New Avalon shooting range. It was the first time Kyuichi Sayanji had ever handled a firearm, which made Wakaba slightly nervous, but he did fine. Then descending upon the Black Angus Steakhouse downtown for her birthday dinner. In keeping with her anyone who tells the restaurant staff it's my birthday will be shot policy, no one did. Early that evening, the duelists were sitting around in the den at 105 Morgan Lane. Uchna, Miki, Dorothy, Juri, and Liza were reading. Wakaba was sprawled on the floor, having her shoulders rubbed by Sayanji, after an impromptu sparring session with Kate's brother Leonard, who was almost ready to take his journeyman's test. Caitlin was playing with Serge. 2 days later, she still had a kind of a dazed look whenever she looked at the tiger, as though she were still not quite convinced that he was really there. Utrina, sitting crossways in an armchair with her shoulders against one arm and her knees hanging over the other, glanced across the room, watched as Serge once again failed to balance on his ball and fell into Kate's arms, and chuckled. She was half convinced now that he was failing on purpose, just because each failure got him a hug. "That's a happy girl," Nall observed from his vantage point on Utrina's stomach. "Hmm," Utrina replied, scratching at his ears. "And a happy tiger." "And I'm a happy dragon," Nall purred, winding his tail around her arm. "Keep doing that right there." Utrina chuckled again, did as instructed, and went back to reading. A few minutes later, the bookshelf on the far wall slid back, much to Wakaba's surprise, and Corwin came in, a smudge of greenish cross-bearing lube and a grin on his face. "Utrina," he said, "can I see you down in my workshop for a minute?" "Sure," she said, putting up her book. She displaced the slightly put-out Nall, who subsided a bit when she put him down in the warm spot she'd left in the chair and promised to return, then followed Corwin into the elevator. To her surprise, his father was there, too, with a look of expectant pleasure so similar to Corwin's that it really drove home the fact that they were father and son. "It's time you found out what that ISO rod you got for Christmas is all about," said Griffin as Corwin keyed the elevator into motion. It followed a different path than Utrina was used to, traveling sideways for a bit longer and in different directions once it was clear of the initial downshaft. Eventually, with its usual bright ting, it delivered them to a short hallway leading to a double door. "Normally," Griffin went on as the three of them went down the hall toward the doors, "I don't hold with sticking people whose birthdays are near Christmas with combination gifts. It's always struck me as a cop-out. My only exception to that little personal rule is that if you're going to do that, you'd best make the gift you give worth enough, in some sense, for two big days like that. In this case, we hope you agree it is." With mirrored smiles, he and Corwin opened the doors and bowed her through like doormen at an exclusive restaurant. Utrina stepped through, then stopped and blinked in amazement. It was one of the hangar-like rooms, like the ones she usually saw first upon descending to the workshop, with big rolling doors, rails in the floor, and a high ceiling studded with industrial lamps. Where Corwin's main hangar was a chaos of destroyed parts, half-disassembled machinery, and oddments, though, this one was neat and tidy, containing only two things. One of them was a truck-mounted starfighter fueling and maintenance module. The other was a scarlet aerospace fighter, stiletto-pointed and sleek, with a pair of straight, T-shaped wings, and a large underslung cannon, its entire body after the cockpit bubble taken up by a brawny vector-ringed fusion turbine. It stood on wheeled reverse tricycle landing gear, cockpit canopy standing open, boarding ladder deployed, waiting. Utrina turned to look at Corwin and his father, who had closed the doors behind them and stood with their arms folded, grinning.
You're giving me the swordfish?" she burst out.
"Well," said Griffin with exaggerated nonchalance, "I haven't used it in decades. It was just gathering dust. And since you liked my asteroid racing stories so much, I figured you might like to have it." He winked, grinning again, and in that instant Utrina knew that he knew, somehow the man knew, that she and Corwin had done that spot of unauthorized asteroid racing during her small craft training back in August. Knew, and wanted her to know that he was letting them get away with it. The perfect expression, the perfect example, of that endearing anarchist streak that he had. She wanted to hug him for it, but was afraid that would break the facade of deliberate ignorance of the whole incident both of them were adopting. "We dug it out of storage when you passed your master's cert exam," Corwin explained, "and started refurbishing it nights. For a while there, we thought we might not have it ready in time. Corwin couldn't work weekends on it much, though, Griffin added. You'd have gotten suspicious if he didn't show up for your weekly dinner.
Want to try it out now? Corwin asked. Or wait until morning?
Utina took the isolinear key out of her pocket, looked at it for a moment. Then she did hug them, first in turn, then both together.
What do you think?
She asked. That night, the Zeta Cygni asteroid belt hosted its first unlimited-class race in more than a decade. It had no audience, only its two participants and an official scorer from the Galactic Asteroid Racing Alliance, but that was enough. Against the signature of the Alliance's founder and President Emeritus, Benjamin D. Hutchins, the race's winner went into the official record book, just like all the others. Swordfish 2, Single Place Experimental, Whiskey X-Ray 9 or 2, 9 or 5, New Avalon, Yu Tenjo piloting. Then, true to her word, the new grand champion of the GARA Unlimited class returned to that chair in the den, put Nall back where he belonged, and finished her book. In the 2 hours she'd been gone, the only thing that had changed was that it was now Sionji's turn to get his back rubbed. Utina chuckled to herself, at that and at everything else. A little smile that just never seemed to want to fade playing at her lips. Before their race, Corwin had proposed a course of action for Thursday, to which Utina had agreed in all particulars. And for the first time in a while, she found herself looking forward to her birthday. She glanced across the room to where Kate was brushing her tiger, and the roommates made eye contact, then grinned spontaneously at each other. Nothing need be said. Juri, from her spot on the couch behind Kate, noticed the exchange and gave Utina a curious look. But Utina only grinned at her and went back to reading. The redhead regarded her thoughtfully for a moment, then smiled herself and returned to her own book. Outside it was snowing again, and Leonard had predicted terrific sledding on the Koopman High Hill by noon tomorrow. Avery Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Feature Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword No. 2, Third Movement, Another Christmas Rose. The symphony will return.